tuned in to the Community Cats podcast. Ready? Let's go. Hey, everyone. Kristen here. I'm the Community Cats podcast technical tabby. I'm just breaking in real quick to let you know that this week's episode is going to be the first part in a two-part series taken from the webinar From the Backyard to the Front Page, Building a TNR Movement presented by Neighborhood Cats. If you're trying to get any kind of TNR project off the ground or you're in the early stages of organization, you are not going to want to miss this one. Plus, it's got a lot of great tips for established TNR pros, too. In part one, Brian Cordes, the National Programs Director of Neighborhood Cats, is going to discuss how Neighborhood Cats got started, what kind of projects they were involved in, how they used targeting to be effective, and how they learned to work with local citizens, businesses, and government officials. The lessons that can be learned from their history help lead to a lot of problem-solving tips and techniques, and you'll be able to use those in your TNR efforts. If you're listening to this episode, but you're thinking, wow, I'd really like to see this with the slides and the handouts and the videos, you are in luck. Head on over to our website at communitycatspodcast.com/TNR training, and you'll scroll all the way to the bottom to the video section, and you can check it out there. We hope you've been enjoying these occasional special episodes and that you're getting lots of ideas from them that will help you turn your passion for cats into action. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, everybody. Stacy here with the Community Cats Podcast. And we are here for a free webinar called From the Backyard to the Front Page, Building a TNR Movement. And it's presented by Neighborhood Cats and hosted here with the team from the Community Cats Podcast. Susie Richmond is the Executive Director of Neighborhood Cats, having served in that role since 2010. She oversees hands-on TNR programs in New York City, Jersey City, and on the island of Maui, as well as using her prior Madison Avenue advertising experience to write, among other things, crowdfunding appeals to help the many sick and injured animals. So one of Susie's favorite projects currently is a veterinary scholarship program designed to train community cat-oriented vets on high-volume spay-neuter techniques. When she's not in the office, you can find Susie out in the fields of Maui, where she recently passed the 1,000 cats trapped mark. Brian Cordes serves as a Neighborhood Cats National Program Director and Susie Richmond's husband back in 1999 while working in Manhattan. As both an attorney and a video director, Brian co-founded Neighborhood Cats after TNRing a colony near where he lived. Except for a 6-year stint as a grants manager for PetSmart Charities, he has been with the organization ever since. He has authored or co-authored handbooks on community TNR and return to field programs. You can always find him online, where he regularly presents both basic and advanced webinars on all things trap, neuter, return in partnership with the Community Cats Podcast.
Okay. Thank you so much, Stacy. Thanks, everybody, for bearing with our little audio glitch there. The topic today is about building a TNR movement. And this is a first in a series that we're doing. Neighborhood Cats is partnering with Community Cats Podcast to do a series on community level TNR policies and programs. So a lot of you probably know we do a lot of kind of the hands-on stuff. We have a monthly TNR training workshop with Community Cats Podcast, and we do another series of webinars, which are about caretaking and trapping. This series is about the policy level. It's about if you're trying to run a program for your town or your city or your county, how would you go about doing this? And today's presentation focuses on how do you get a TNR program started in the first place? How do you grow it? And how do you get it to that community level as kind of step one? So I think what we're going to do today is kind of a two-part presentation. And the first part is just kind of a history of Neighborhood Cats and the lessons that, looking back, we can draw from that, which may be helpful to you. So in the second part, we'll go over more general stuff about like what kind of services should you provide and equipment and things like that. So to begin, we have, you know, Neighborhood Cats started as a very small grassroots group back in 1999. So geez, was that like getting near 25 years ago, 24 years ago. There were just three of us who were volunteers. We're living on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and we were self-funded. You know, we didn't start as any kind of organization, just literally three neighbors were interested in what was happening in our neighborhood. There were no spay-neuter programs for feral cats or community cats, as they're often referred to today, in New York City at the time. You could, you know, find a veterinarian or maybe the Humane Society or something who might fix one or two cats for you now and then. But there was nothing at an organized level. And the euthanasia rates for cats at the city shelters were extremely high. So this is the transformation that took place. And you can see in the year 2000, now neighborhood cats and the TNR program are not responsible for all of this drastic reduction. There were quite a few other programs going on, but it was a big part of it. And you could see where the intake of cats into animal care centers of New York City went from just under 30,000 to just under 10,000 by 2022, and euthanasia dropped by 95%. So Maddie's Fund came in and did a huge program to incentivize pulling cats from the city shelters, and the ASPCA opened up free spay-neuter for low-income pet parents. And then the third leg of that was the TNR program, which over that course of time ended up sterilizing tens of thousands of community cats. So how did we get from, you know, three volunteer neighbors to a citywide program that could make this contribute to this kind of progress? So our very first colony was, well, the story of this colony is it's a funny one, because people ask, like, well, how did you personally ever get involved in this? And it started with, I was just minding my own business one day and walking up the block where I lived, and I saw there's this empty grassy lot, kind of a rarity in, on the Upper West Side to have an empty lot. There it was between some buildings, and I saw a kitten jumping around behind a wrought iron fence, jumping around in the grass. And at the time, I had some friends who were involved in animal rescue. I wasn't myself. And I saw the one and I thought, well, that's very manageable. You know, I'll just call, get a hold of the kitten. I'll call Marilyn and hand him off, and that'll take care of that. And then a couple of minutes later, I saw two more kittens jumping around. And I started to think, like, well, you know, this is going to be a little harder than I thought, but I think it's still going to be quite manageable. 2 minutes later, I saw two more, five little kittens jumping around. And I just knew that, you know, I had this sinking feeling that my life was about to change forever. And sure enough, it did. So I started poking around and came upon a couple of other neighbors who were doing the same thing. And we discovered that in this inner courtyard of that particular square block, there were 30 cats and kittens. And they had all started from two a couple of years ago. And a, you know, kind-hearted person who put food out every day but did not spay or neuter. And 2 years later, there were 30 cats. And I came upon my two partners who were also concerned about the situation, and we kind of found each other. We developed relationships with all the store owners in that area, the superintendents of the buildings, the doormen, the residents. And we scrounged around and we found some local vets who would agree to fix one or two at a time at a small cost. So this really all started with this one colony. And you can see some of that terrain here. And that's patches in the foreground. And if you look to your upper left, you'll see a gray cat sitting on the fire escape. And I want to emphasize that this was not planned. We didn't think like, oh, we have a model colony now. I'm kind of looking back and pulling out the lessons of what we kind of accidentally did right. So we made this essentially a model colony. You know, the goal was to get 100% of the cats spayed and neutered, which took some time, but we did get there. We pulled all the kittens who could be socialized and friendly adults out in the beginning and placed them in homes, which again was not a easy or cheap or a quick thing to do, but that's how we went about it. And we were really zealous in our caretaking, probably overzealous to the point where, you know, we got kicked out of a couple of places because we were always around, but we made sure they had excellent food, and, you know, twice a day, and that they had excellent warm winter shelter. We did everything as well as we possibly could, and we documented everything. And that was huge in retrospect. So we collected data on each cat, you know, when were they trapped? When were they fixed? What was their outcome? We took photographs. We had kept records. This is another kitty from that very first colony named Misty. We were successful. The colony size within a year dropped from 30 to 12. And a lot of that had to do with the adoptions. We had far fewer nuisance complaints right away. And there was the only kittens that were born after that first year were from one very elusive cat who took us several years before we could catch her in a drop trap. Again, the idea for your purposes, those of you listening today, is the idea that You know, we didn't run around all over the place trying to grab cats wherever we can or whoever asked. Or we were very, very focused because we were not thinking, let's build a movement. We were just thinking, we want to help these particular cats. So we really were laser focused on making this one colony as successful as it could be. In part, that was because I know I personally was pretty skeptical in the beginning. I mean, when we first realized there were 30 cats, I like to say I did what any good citizen would do in a situation like that, which was try to find someone else to take care of the problem for me. But, you know, when I called up shelters and rescues and the city shelter, there was no help available for community cats, zero. We could have trapped them and dropped them off at the shelter where they would probably have been euthanized. And that was really it. So when Trap Neuter Return was introduced to us as a concept, my thought was, well, why not? You know, we really have no other alternatives. And I wasn't sure it would work. So I think we just did this one model colony to see, is can you do TNR in a dense urban environment like Manhattan and have it be successful? And it turned out it was. So that kind of created the first building block for moving forward. So one of the concepts about doing a model colony and focusing on one is, especially in the very beginning, you know, we had, even if we could afford it financially, there were not very many veterinarians who were going to work with us to do community cat spay neuter. We used to go around and try to find veterinarians who had just opened their office because they needed the cash and they were happy and they liked the idea of, you know, sharpening their surgery skills. So capacity was extremely limited. And here's the thing, if you aren't focused and you just kind of spread yourself too thin with your limited resources, let's take this as a hypothetical, what you're seeing on your screen. So you've got five colonies with five cats each, but you only have five surgeries, right? And you have to decide how are you going to distribute them, allocate them among these five colonies. And you could do what many programs even today still think of as the fair way to do it, right? So let's say each of these colonies has their own caretaker and they all want surgeries. So you're fair and you give one to each of the five. Now, how does that look like on the ground in terms of cat population? Well, you see here, you have a 20% sterilization rate in each colony. And the problem with that is that's great for the cat that gets spayed or neutered, but you still, in each colony, you still have four out of the five cats who are able to reproduce. And they will continue to mate, and there'll be as many cats as that environment can support. And when we talk about how many cats an environment support, the fancy term is carrying capacity. And that has to do with how much food is available, how adequate is the shelter. And any given environment has a carrying capacity, and the number of cats will be equal to what, if nothing is done, if there's no spay-neuter intervention or otherwise, the number of animals present will equal the amount of that the food source can support. Now, with cats, that food source can be what's called fungible, meaning it can grow because somebody can just keep putting out more and more food, but eventually you're going to hit the ceiling. It's a little easier to think about it. Like, let's say it's the dumpster behind the supermarket and they put out enough food every day to support 20 cats. And lo and behold, there's 20 cats back there. Now, if you do nothing, you know, the myth is that, well, those 20 cats will be, you know, in 2 years, there'll be 5,000 of them. Well, of course, that's silly. There'll still only be 20 because that's the amount of food that's available. When a colony hits its carrying capacity, then you start to see things like disease. You see male cats killing kittens. You see migration. Nature takes over and keeps the balance between the resources that are available and the number of animals that are using them. So in this case, in our hypothetical that we're looking at, each colony has a carrying capacity of five. Looks like the one on the upper right might have six because I can't count to five. Then you're always fixing one cat is not going to alter the population demographics. You will continue to have five cats there indefinitely because you haven't altered the reproductive capacity enough to alter the number, to alter the population. So those four out of five cats that are not fixed will reproduce to the point where they will keep the colonies at five. So with a 20% sterilization rate, you've accomplished absolutely nothing in terms of reducing the population, the overall population of cats. Now, if we took those five surgeries and instead of being fair, we went and tried to be effective, this is what we call colony level targeting. And we took all five surgeries and we concentrated on one colony and we got them 100% spay neutered. Then in that colony, you could overcome, you would start to, you know, if you're keeping an eye out and removing new cats as they come, you would start to see the population dropping over time because they can't reproduce. So as they get adopted or they die or whatever means they may migrate away, the number of cats will go down. So now when you look at the overall picture, you have a population because one part of the other four colonies are remaining stable. They're at their carrying capacity, but the one colony is going down. So overall, you're going down. And in a TNR program, the way you achieve population decline throughout the community is by having a growing number of 100% sterilized colonies. It's not about how many cats you fix necessarily, but how well you allocate what you do have. And now the more colonies you can get 100% spayed and neutered, the faster your overall population will go down. But even if you just fix one, and then maybe two the next year, but you go about it the right way, you will start to see some decline as opposed to spreading your resources too thinly, like we were talking about before, and you achieve zero decline. So that's what the model colony kind of taught us back in the beginning of neighborhood cats. So once we saw success, you know, we saw a stable colony where the population had gone from 30 to 12, the growth started to happen in terms of the program. And the way that happened was just word of mouth. And, you know, at that time, there was almost like a colony of feral cats behind every building or within every square block. And when people heard that the situation where we were had, you know, greatly improved, there weren't as many cats, they weren't waking people up in the middle of the night, it didn't smell in the backyards, they wanted the same thing done behind their building. So people started to ask us to come over and help them. And this is another thing that, you know, I can't take credit for having figured it out at the time, but when we look backwards, we went about this in a very methodical way. It was driven largely by the fact that this is, all of us had full-time jobs and the Upper West Side is where we lived. So that's where we would continue to work as we spread out from our model colony. So next we TNR'd the colony that was right across the street. And then we did others on nearby blocks. And the kind of, if you, you know, throw a pebble in the pond and the circles expand, that's kind of how we started to grow our program. In the course of growing the program, again, driven by the fact that, you know, we were volunteers and had limited amount of time, we did whatever we could to maximize caretaker participation. So we were not available to do everything because we had plenty of requests for help. And, you know, we were not a do-it-all service for you. It wasn't enough to just make a phone call and tell us there were cats you wanted fixed because, you know, join the line, right? So we would work with people who would actively participate and contribute to the project. And that might be they would assist with the trapping or they would provide holding space to keep the cats while we're trapping or transport or funding, or they would feed. And then we would, our little group would fill in the gaps, which usually consisted of trapping and helping to feed the cats while they were confined in their traps. It grew to the point where eventually we decided to incorporate and started doing some basic fundraising, and we got some small grants. And the grants came from going back to that model colony where we had documented everything and we had taken photos. So we were able to make a nice little presentation to funders about how TNR worked and why you should give us money to do more of it.
Calling all kitten enthusiasts. Get ready for a one-of-a-kind, two-day virtual experience dedicated entirely to kittens. Introducing the 2024 Online Kitten Conference, taking place on June 8th and 9th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time and presented by the Community Cats Podcast and the National Kitten Coalition. Prepare to be whisked away into a world of adorable antics and invaluable insight as leading experts gather to celebrate and educate on all things kitten. From newborn care to playful behavior, this conference is a treasure trove of knowledge for anyone committed to improving the lives of these fluffy bundles of joy. Whether you're a seasoned kitten rescuer or new to animal welfare and eager to learn the ropes, the Online Kitten Conference offers a perfect blend of practical advice and in-depth details about the new and the now in kitten care. From empowering fosters to preventing upper respiratory disease, from kitten socialization and behavioral well-being to what we know about kitten mortality and how we can help each other deal with loss, the weekend's live sessions, engaging workshops, and intimate discussions are crafted to nurture your passion and enhance your knowledge of these pint-sized purr machines so you can make a difference. Access to our exclusive Facebook group is included with your registration. There you can connect with fellow kitten lovers from across the globe, share your experiences, and discover innovative approaches to kitten care and advocacy. Also included is access to recordings of all sessions. You can review anything you miss, or if you found something particularly interested, check it out again. And you'll also be able to participate in Fun Cat trivia and prizes. Some lucky attendee will even win a cage from CDE Cages. With the convenience of an online platform, you can join in the fun from the comfort of your own couch, surrounded by your own furry friends, and probably your kitten fosters. Visit communitycatspodcast.com/kittencon now to reserve your spot in the 2024 Online Kitten Conference. Once again, that website for details and registration is communitycatspodcast.com/kittencon. Let's come together, celebrate the smallest felines, and pave the way for a bright future for these precious creatures. Don't miss out. Register today.
Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now. Do you need TNR resources to share on demand? We've got you covered. Check out our Everything TNR playlist, available now on the Community Cats Podcast YouTube channel. This comprehensive playlist includes all of our free webinars presented in partnership with Neighborhood Cats. Topics include tips for trappers and colony caregivers, best practices for targeted TNR, return to field programs, and much more. There's something for everyone who wants to help outdoor cats and kittens. Free to stream anytime. Just visit www.communitycats.com/TNR-playlist. Are you a proud cat parent looking for the perfect, affordable health care for your kitty? Well, look no further than the Community Cat Clinic, conveniently located in Woodstock, Georgia, just north of Atlanta and not too far from the Tennessee and South Carolina borders. The health and happiness of all cats are the top priorities at this feline-only hospital. From preventative care, spay, neuter, and vaccines to specialized and innovative treatments like full mouth dental, ultrasound, radio, iodine therapy, emergency blockage cases, they've got your cat's well-being covered. For the TNR community and local shelters, they offer easy-to-access, low-cost spay-neuter services and volume appointments. So if you want to do a large TNR project, this is the clinic you want to go to. It's worth the extra trip. Appointments are available most days. Check out the Community Cat Clinic online at communitycatclinic.com or visit them in person at the Walmart Shopping Center at the Shops of Trickum on Highway 92 at Trickum Road in Woodstock, Georgia. More purr, less price.
So then we branched out to a local park, which was Riverside Park, which is along the Hudson River, and stretches of the park where we worked went from 72nd to 96th Street. So that's a little over 2 miles long. And there were four colonies spread out throughout that part of Riverside Park, a total of about 65 cats. And we developed a very strong network of caretakers, meaning the people who went in there every day. And I think one of the crucial things in our growth was that we were working with the local government, with the New York City Parks Department, and they provided assistance with trapping and access to their facilities and allowed us to manage the cats, you know, to get them on a feeding pattern, to go in and, you know, trap them and, you know, enter otherwise parts of the park maybe we wouldn't be able to get to. And that turned out to be a very successful project too, to the point where eventually, you know, it took some time over the course of 15 years or so, we reduced the population to one cat. And I believe that cat is now has either passed away or has been brought indoors. So at now, of course, you know, parks attract cats, and there's, I'm not going to say there's zero cats there today, but at one point we did get it down to zero through this particular project. And then we got letters of recommendation from the parks, head of the parks department, who was thrilled with the whole thing. And again, we've created another example of TNR success. Basically, what we ended up doing is creating what I would call a model neighborhood. So after 2.5 years, we had, and you can see this represented by the dots on the map, which is a screenshot from a program called Cat Stats that we'll talk about later. But basically, each one of those pins represents a colony, and the green ones are 100% fixed, and the yellow ones still have some that need to be done, and nobody's been done, and the gray are extinct. So basically, you can see we concentrated our efforts on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. When we then decided to like go citywide with our programs, we went to Animal Care Centers of New York City, which does animal control. And we told them what we'd been doing. We said, hey, we've been working on the Upper West Side for 2.5 years. We think this program is very successful. And the first thing the director did was go into his data to see what kind of impact we'd had on stray cats coming into his facility. And he found that the area we'd been working in, the intake had dropped by 73% as compared to a slight rise elsewhere in the city. So again, concentrating, focusing, creating a model on a neighborhood scale produced the data we needed to persuade city officials and shelter officials that this was a good idea and to get behind it. Now, let's talk about that concept of a model neighborhood a little bit. So we talked about colony level targeting and about how important it is to get as close to 100% of the cats in a group spayed and neutered as possible. Now, if that's all you're doing, you're only doing what we call colony level targeting, which is a lot. It's a great thing to do, Don, when I say only. But if that's the one tactic you're using throughout your community, and now we're talking not just about a neighborhood, we're talking about the whole city or the whole town, this is what it looks like, right? You've got these colonies of cats scattered all over the place, and you're kind of picking colonies here and there to get to 100% spay neutered. So you have these little islands that you see here where TNR has been implemented. Now, the problem with this should be kind of obvious when you see it on this scale, right? Because your little island of red there, where the colony is fixed, is surrounded by colonies of cats who are not spayed and neutered. And we talked about carrying capacity and what happens when the number of cats starts to outstrip the resources that are available. Well, one of the things that happens is the cats start looking for new food sources. And if you have a colony of cats that is declining in population, like in the red circle, but the food source is still steady, then all of a sudden you have, as the population drops, you have unutilized resources, right? You have enough food for 5 cats, but you only have 4. Well, those surrounding colonies are likely to quickly fill that gap. A new cat will move in, and the old cats are not likely to try to keep them out if there's enough food. They will start to guard their territory when there isn't enough food for new cats. But when there is, they don't, you know, it's sort of like join the party. So you get this kind of partial vacuum effect of unutilized resources attracting cats in. So there is a way around that, though, and that's when you not only target colonies, but you target colonies in a section of your community. So we're talking about the exact same number of surgeries, only difference is how we allocate them. And now on the lower right of your screen, you see, well, we haven't done, you know, 6 scattered colonies throughout our city. We've done 6 that are right next to each other. And this is going to help us as the population starts to drop from having new cats moving in. If you cast a wide enough net, you can reduce the overall population. And that's what we had inadvertently done when we just worked on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. We had basically counteracted that vacuum effect of having cats move in order to take away and take advantage of unutilized resources. So your most effective approach to trap, neuter, return is this combination of colony level and community level targeting. So you don't just target the cats in a colony and get them 100%. You also target colonies in a specific area, not scattered throughout. And then you can get the results that we got on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. So success breeds success. And it's important to understand that real life examples are much more persuasive than theory. And that's part of the reason why I'm going over our history, is it's not theoretical. It's something that we actually experienced. People facing similar issues, which there are usually all over when it comes to community cats, they see that you have a solution, and that starts to attract donors and grantors, and it provides that foundation you need for expanding into the wider community. So think about what we could have done instead. Like, we could have done a colony, that first colony, and maybe we could have done 70% of the cats and not had as much success and continued to have, litter kittens for a more extended period of time. And then we could have gotten calls from all over the city, and instead of concentrating on the Upper West Side, we could have run to Brooklyn and done a colony there, and then gone up to the Bronx and done a colony there. We would not have created this foundation that allowed us to grow, because we would not have been able to demonstrate this kind of success that we experienced. So remember to document everything, track your impact on colony size, how many cats were there when you started, how many cats were there after, keep track of the outcomes. Shelter data, especially intake, is real important. If you're in a community where shelter intake is either not available or for whatever reason, it's not a meaningful statistic, because maybe it's not open admission or they change their hours or they won't give it to you, you can still track data. You can track the requests that will come into you for your assistance and just put it on a spreadsheet, what address, what neighborhood, where are they from, how many cats. You can, municipalities often track complaint calls, dead on arrival. When there's cats, when there's severe cat overpopulations, like when we first arrived in Maui, I guess 6-7 years ago, I mean, it's terrible to see, but there were dead cats all over the place on the roads. And fast forward to today, and it's rare. It's a rare thing. So you can, shelters track what are called DOAs, dead on arrivals. So you can get those statistics. Rabies exposures, that's what public health departments care the most about, because they're very, very expensive. One mama in one county worked in a mama cat, and her kittens ended up exposing over 30 people to rabies, and they all had to be treated at a cost of about $3,000 each. So if you can keep track of rabies exposures, from doesn't mean that people catch rabies, because you don't wait to find out. If you do, they're all going to die. So as soon as somebody's potentially exposed, they get treated. So the number of rabies exposures from cats is something that you can correlate your TNR program to a reduction in that. That's going to be very persuasive evidence that it's a good program. And of course, photos, videos, that'll always documenting what you do. I mentioned the program to attract colonies. We do have a program called Cat Stats. We're not handling new applications until March, just as a word of warning, because we're busy winding up a rescue project we've been doing for 6 months in Maui wildfire burn zones. This program is $50 fee to start it, and it basically tracks colonies of cats. It doesn't track individual cats, but it will track where they're located and caretaker contact information and how many cats were there when you started and how many cats are there now and how many cats are fixed. And it creates those maps that I showed you and allows for kind of a good visual on where your work is. And if you're trying to do that and concentrate and target specific areas, it's great to have that visual guide. So go to catstats.org and you can learn more about it there. But again, it can be very, very helpful. We use it in New York City, where we're tracking, I forget how many it is now, it's 3,000 or 4,000 colonies of cats throughout the city. Another thing about expanding and lessons learned from our experience, starting at Neighborhood Cats, is how do you gain those additional resources? And like I say, we approach the city shelter, and we also approach the ASPCA and the larger animal welfare agencies. in the city. And we just showed them what we'd been doing and talked to them and advocated for more resources from their organizations and more focus on community cats. And, you know, don't be surprised if they're not as aware as you are of what's going on. You know, community cats tend to be hidden. If you're not working on the street level, you may not even realize they're there. We actually approached, you know, one very large agency, and the first thing they said was, what feral cat problems? You know, they didn't realize that, you know, we had, you know, probably at least 200,000 or 300,000 of them living on the streets, but they were open to learning. And once they were educated about it, they became very supportive. Now, a great way to get an agency involved or, you know, persuade a government officials to support you is to do pilot projects. So with Animal Care Centers of New York City, we didn't ask them, like, you know, dive in the deep end and, you know, commit huge amounts of resources and give us your full support. Instead, what we said was, let's do a pilot project together. And we gave them a list of colonies that we could work on and let them pick, you know, three or four of them. Of course, we were very careful about which colonies were on the list. You know, we made sure there were not impossible situations where we had we had reliable people. And they ended up having a very good experience with this pilot. It was very important when you do the pilot to create a hands-on role for the organizations that you're working with. So we did the trapping. Neighborhood Cats did the trapping, but they did the transport. And they held the cats and they arranged for the surgeries. So they got a real firsthand look. And that really solidified TNR as their favored solution to community cat situations. Yeah. So what are roles for, you know, it's always good if you can not say, what can you do for me? But if you can say, here's what you can do for me. So animal control can provide support for official approval of trap neuter return. If you go to your city council and your ACO is by your side, that's going to be a lot more persuasive than if you're alone. They can refer complaint calls and inquiries about community cats to your organization. One of the things we started in New York City was what we call ear-tipped cat alerts. So when a cat with an ear tip was intaked at a city shelter, Neighborhood Cats was notified and given the address where the cat came from. And we were often able to, through our growing network of caretakers, we were able to identify the owner, you know, the caretaker of the cat, who was then able to reclaim them as a return to owner. That really motivated caretakers to join our program because they knew if their cats were ear tipped and they ever ended up in the city shelter, that they would hear about it, that they would have an opportunity to get that cat. Whereas in the past, you know, ear tipped cat going in, how are you even going to know they're there? And after a certain amount of time, they, you know, often cannot be placed in a home, so they would be euthanized. Sharing, you know, they can collect and share data to help you. And again, I mentioned a joint project. So what you see in this slide was the New York City Animal Control and Neighborhood Cats. We did a joint TNR project in a park of about 30 cats. And they were, you know, hands-on involved in every aspect of it. And again, that helped solidify their support. And we talked about pilot projects. You know, be careful if you succeed in getting one, that you select the sites carefully. Don't pick the most difficult ones. Make sure you have adequate resources and cooperative caretakers. We prioritized government agencies as we began to expand citywide. There's a lot of agencies that manage land. And if they manage land, they're going to manage land with cats. So Parks Department, Sanitation Department, Transportation, Police, Corrections, Fire. Whenever they called about a cat situation, they went to the top of our list of who we were going to work with, because we figured that was one of the fastest ways to embed TNR in the local culture, was to have government agencies experience it, see the results firsthand, and then become advocates for us. That kind of became, then we started getting requests from other parts of the sanitation department to, you know, work on other locations as well. Our biggest breakthrough was Rikers Island, which is the largest jail in the country and a, you know, fairly notorious place. There are actually 11 different jails on the island, ranging from minimum to maximum security. And with that project, we were able to, with such a large scale one, there were hundreds of cats, and the island's about 440 acres, and you have to go in and out of yards and all around the perimeter. It really kind of a complex project, we were able to pull together all the different animal agencies in the city to work on this. So Neighborhood Cats handled the trapping and the overall coordination. And then the ASPCA, as well as Animal Care Centers of New York City, sent their mobile spay-neuter clinics onto the island once a week in the beginning. And the Humane Society of New York provided care for any special cases like injured cats or very sick cats. And we were also able to bring in what were other brand new TNR groups who had started to sprout up and bring them onto the island and train them in mass trapping techniques, you know, how to trap entire colonies at once. And it kind of caught the imagination of the press, the concept being that the people were in the cages and the cats were the ones who were free. They loved that juxtaposition. So ended up in all the local media with, you know, New York Times and New York Post, New York Daily News, several TV, was in Cat Fancy magazine. So it ended up getting huge amount of publicity. And that, of course, drove even more interest in trap neuter return and people wanting it done in their neighborhoods. So pretty much solidified what TNR was and that it was a solution to a longstanding problem throughout all of New York City. And then I think the lesson that we drew from that you can take is, you know, seek out high profile projects, things that we call media magnets, prioritize them, just like you would prioritize working with a government agency. If you see an opportunity to do a TNR project and it's going to translate into a lot of media interest, you want to, especially in the beginning, you want to jump and make that jump to head of the line. So in our experience, jails and prisons are media magnets, sports stadiums, any major tourist attractions in your area, also college campuses. And again, let me emphasize, you're building a movement, so you have to not be random about it. It can't just be the first person who called is the next person who gets your help. You know, you only have so much time, so many resources. You want to be strategic in the beginning and kind of choose your projects. Don't let your projects choose you, and because they're all deserving cats, so you might as well help as many as you can, but in a way that will grow your resources, grow your popularity, grow your name recognitions. So with that kind of growth, as you can imagine, you know, we could not handle, you know, what were becoming the flood of interest. So then we started doing workshops and we figured we can't do TNR for everybody in New York City, but we can teach everybody who's interested how to do it themselves and save them the learning curve, the 2-3 year learning curve that we had gone through. So we started hosting training workshops. And this doesn't work in every community. It works in communities where there's a, you know, fairly large population. You don't need millions of people, but it's not going to work in a small town with hundreds, right? You need enough of a pool of people that they're going to fill your classrooms and then go back and practice it. So training workshops are very good if you have a population to draw from. And in those workshops, you're teaching basic TNR protocols, you know, how to trap, also how to access local services, how do you make a spay-neuter appointment, who offers traps for free, things like that. And we created what we call certification, meaning that if you attended the workshop, it gave you access to resources you wouldn't get otherwise, such as low cost or free, at the time, free spay-neuter, and again, assistance from Neighborhood Cats in terms of coaching, kind of a suite of services where that door opened by attending a 2-3 hour workshop. Now, of course, the Community Cats podcast and Neighborhood Cats offer monthly TNR certification workshops online. So you don't need to worry about that part of it. You just need to decide, are you going to make that a requirement for access to the services that you're providing to your community?
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.